The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
Well, hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Masters Week for Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews coming to you from the Dallas studios. And we have, of course, Frank Bassett at the, well, let's say our temporary Augusta studios. He's at the Northwood Club in Augusta, Georgia. This is Tuesday, April the 3rd, again, of Masters Week. So a big, big week in the world of golf. May not be a bigger week in the world of golf as far as a lot of people are concerned. And all eyes on the practice rounds today. We're going to talk about that. We have a whole host of people that will be joining Frank there at the Northwood Club, including Steve Elkington. And he'll be talking about Seeker Golf. We, of course, talked to Steve just a couple of weeks ago. We'll also have Frank Borkowski, former Boston Celtic, joining us. Who knows who's going to pop in there at the Northwood Club, because a Northwood Club, for everybody to know, is a hospitality house right outside the pearly gates of Augusta National. Just a, I don't know, from Frank's standpoint, probably a five iron away from the gates. And Elwick will be coming to you from the Northwood Club. Frank, how is everything going in Augusta today?
Yeah, it's a five iron for me. It's a wedge for Steve Elkington, okay? It's just a wedge. It's going great. We're happy to be here. Yeah. Welcome, everybody. Got a big crowd in here today. And they're actually being held hostage, so they have to listen to this show. So it's going to be a lot of fun. The weather's beautiful here, pal. I mean, it just doesn't get any better.
Oh, good,
and,
good.
And the course is in immaculate condition, as everyone's saying, as it always is. It never isn't. And it's just going to be a fun week. It's the Masters. What do you expect?
Anything interesting at the practice round today?
Two eagles by Tiger Woods today in his back
practice
round. Two eagles.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Now, thanks, Steve.
Wow.
Steve, let's bring Steve in, because Steve has a comment real quick about that.
Oh, I think Golf Channel's already announced that he's leaving the tournament. They've already counted it in actual scoring. I do think today, though, was all about Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. I think they gave the Masters a gift today. Normally speaking, they would not play together in the practice round. I think there was Freddie Couples in that group, and maybe one other, which seems to be lost in all this, but they look to be like they're having fun. But I think the patrons got a look at possibly what the future may look like as these guys get older. They got seven jackets between the two of them. And, mate, it was just like watching fish, you know, in a tight school running after these guys today. It was 25, 30 deep. Never been any more hype than it is right now for Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson.
That's the voice of Steve Elkington, a 10-time PGA Tour winner, the PGA Championship winner, 2-time Players Championship winner, and at my old home course, at TPC Sawgrass, in the days when that course wasn't as easy, it was played in March. And that golf course was a lot tougher in those days. But before we dig deeper, Tim, there's somebody else that's here with us that's pretty doggone important to SeekerGolf.com and to this show and everybody else, and that would be Diane Knox.
Hello, how are you today?
How are you, gorgeous?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm good. It's been hot. We've been out on the course all day, and it is hot out there today. Gorgeous weather, though.
It was beautiful out there.
Can't complain ever.
And you were sending, how did you send out, you sent something out from the course with sandwiches and all that just to make me hungry, didn't you?
Oh, no, I didn't. But the thing is, you're not allowed your phone on the course.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
But you're allowed to take a camera on the practice days. And last year when I was on my way, I stopped at Target and bought a camera. And I didn't own a camera that wasn't on my phone. It was weird. So I kept that and took that out today, and we got some pictures, and then had to do the old school thing of uploading them to the computer and posting them that way. So, yeah, Steve and I ate egg salad and pimento cheese sandwiches.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, they were good. The egg salad is a game changer. It's so good.
I've just been sitting here all day by myself.
Oh, we should have.
Nobody loves it.
They're only $1.50, too.
I know. It's really cheaper here.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Well, it's free.
We're at the Northwood Club, as Tim, you well know, and Steve and Diane. It's great hospitality from Prime Sport. Thank you, Prime Sport, for being our sponsor for Golf Talk America on PGATour.com. And thank you also to Tour Edge Golf, who sent us a nice set of clubs. We're going to be interviewing another competitive company later, too. But thanks to Tour Edge, you guys are great also. So
you're going to have to hide those clubs, Frank? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we're going to have to put the Cleveland clubs out, put the Tour Edge back, and
get a tarp, cover them up.
Nice. They're nice looking set.
It is a nice looking set of clubs.
Yeah.
So Steve, we got to go here. You know, you have a lot of experience across the street on this golf course. I mean, today, you're walking on the course, looking around. First impression of what you think is going to happen from a difficulty standpoint this week?
It's been a cold winter, and the grass is, of course, we all know that they overseed with ryegrass, but underneath that is Bermuda grass, and it's probably not as robust coming out of the ground as it would be, because we're slightly behind the bloom cycle. In other words, I think this week could be the best bloom of the azaleas. I'm just checking it out. It's probably not even one-third open, so it could be just spectacular from horticultural point this week. But I think the green's going to be really fast. Now, tomorrow there's a bit of an unknown with this weather coming in, but all things being equal, I don't think it's going to bother anything, because they got those sub-air greens. They can dry them out to a point, which is pretty interesting when people are listening to they say, well, what do you mean by they can dry the greens? Well, underneath Augusta, they have this sub-air system that's cost, I think, $1 million per green, that can literally vacuum the water out of the greens, so they can keep the greens, Frank, as you know, the way they want them. They don't give us the number how fast they just say they're tournament speed.
Tim, how's your putter working, pal?
Yeah, we all know what that means.
What do you think? Yeah, what do you think it is?
The thing that's really interesting about Augusta is, you know, people that may not know what Elk's referring to is there's almost a whole golf course underneath that golf course. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point it's revealed that there's tunnels and people working down in there that are down there for a time.
Yeah, the only thing that's wrong about what you just said, it won't be revealed. There was a key word there.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, you'll never know. We'd never know that. But they have such a consciousness of having a perfect golf course and money's no object. So they do whatever they need to do to make it. If it rains, it'll look like it didn't rain 5 minutes later. If it's cold, it'll warm up. If the greens are hard, they'll make them slow. If they're slow, they'll make them fast. They can do anything they want. And I think there's just, and I mean this in a good way, almost like a Wizard of Oz, somebody that sits there with dials, and they just dictate everything you want about that golf course. That's what makes it magic, is the golf course is almost always pristine. So you can't use the excuse of, well, it was this, it was sloppy, it was a little bit of that you can sometimes say in golf. In this case, if you don't play well, it's pretty much on you.
Well, let's go back, you know, let's get away from the course for a minute. I want to go back, and Diane, I don't mean to cut you out of this, so you
That's
jump in
okay.
and
no,
tell us just to shut up. And
no, I
whatever.
Enjoy it. I'm taking
okay.
it all in.
But I want to go back to Steve Elkington's career, because
at Augusta, there's no jacket well, in that
no,
conversation.
But I will tell you that, and you know as well as I do, I mean, I watched you through the years. I lived at Sawgrass, saw you come through that place, and your game was as good as anybody's game's ever been for a number of years. What's the highest high and the lowest low of your career?
Well, my highest high, of course, would probably win the PGA at Riviera in 1995, but in 95, I also won the Varden Trophy, which was something that we all thought about. We don't hear as much about it now. They've sort of lost in the FedEx Cup shuffle, but the Varden Trophy was the measure of how good you were for the consistency of the year, and I think I was like 68.57 for the year.
Wow.
I finished third here at the Masters with my best finish in the Masters twice. That was with Crenshaw in 95 when he had his second victory, and in 92, I think, when Langer had his second victory. So the Masters was a bit of a love-hate for me. I used to come here and struggle with my putting. I was always a little intimidated. It seemed like I had a stretch of years where the course was exceptionally on edge, and that made me more on edge. Like I said, it's putting here was... You've got to be really comfortable from 3 to 4 feet, where you have to dive that ball in with a really high line, and it's hard to putt away from the cup from 3 feet. Like, I mean, way away from the cup. So, to me, you know, playing here, it's all about the second shot. They can say, you know, you can get caught up into trying to draw the ball and do all that stuff, but at the end of the day, mate, if you can put the ball on the green in a decent spot, anyone can win the Masters if you can get that second shot in there.
Well, I think, you know, Zach Johnson proved that years ago when everyone said he was incapable of ever winning the Masters because he just wasn't long enough.
It's where you are on the green is the, of course, we all know it.
So,
We all know that this is probably represents the opening of the golf season, so that's part of the excitement. And then, of course, everyone else, as you know, they all very familiar with this course. I mean, we all know what you have to do at 10. We all know what we have to do at 13. Even the people who have never been there or seen it or played it or ever heard of it, they know what the players are up against, and I think that's the most sort of familiar surroundings. Everyone says, oh, I'm going back, and I'm going to watch it, and it's going to be awesome. And it is, and it will be.
There you go.
Hey, Steve, I'm curious. When you play the Masters, And you played it how many times total did you play?
Probably about 13, 12 or 13.
Okay. Was your mindset to gamble? Did you think you had to go for greens at 13 you needed to get there in two, or 15 you needed to get there in two? Or was it a, let me just play a solid game and see how the cards fall? Did you figure when you were playing? Of course, you're playing the beginning of Tiger, also some of the great golfers around you. How did you think you had to attack that golf course or not attack?
Combination of everything you just said. Sometimes you had to gamble. Sometimes you had to, you know, push it a little bit, do things that you don't want to. For example, go into the green in 15. You have plenty of club, but I was kind of a low hitter. I see these guys play 15. They hit the ball way up in the air and make it stop. I see Jack did that and Tiger. But I was a lower hitter, so I was always afraid of going way over the back and then maybe coming, getting in trouble again. So I was more or less on 15 trying to get my ball over to the right in that bunker. That bunker's not too bad. It depends what kind of tools you have to play this course. So where I was able to make hay was my strength in my game has always been hitting iron shots of medium trajectory so I could make that ball stop and do what I wanted to do with the mid-irons. That was where I could do well.
You're also saying that your best finish, third, is that correct?
I think third twice, yeah.
And so in those days, in those rounds when you're...
When you say those days, I mean, you're putting me back there.
Those good days.
I was waiting for that.
Grandpa. He's bigger than you are.
those good days, those memories of what you had. What were you thinking on Sunday in specific? We talked about gambling or not gambling, but on Sunday... Of those rounds, were you keeping an eye on leaderboard? Did you know where you stood at all times?
Always. Yeah. Never not know where you are in a game of anything. You know, whatever, if there's some scoring involved, I need to know. That whole idea of not looking at the board, I mean, who does that? That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. That's stupid. You got to know where you stand. Otherwise, you have no strategy. So I think I would consider myself play the course traditionally, you know, like play an iron on three. Always lay up, never go for that one. I mean, there's some odds that have been proven at the Masters of how you play this course, and I think that's what's so interesting. We all know how to play it. Every player that's getting ready for this event knows exactly how to play the course. It's just whether or not they can execute it. It's a very difficult piece of property to negotiate. It's got side hill lies both ways. It's got intimidating tee shots, and of course the greens are a nightmare if you're on the wrong side of the hole.
Yeah, I agree with that. Diane Knox, yes. I need your 2 cents worth on this.
Of course.
You work with this man all the time with Secret Golf. I want you to tell us what you guys do at Secret Golf. That's interesting.
Oh, well, what we do is, the thing about Elk is he has got this relationship with our players that no one else is going to have, because Elk's been there, he's done that. And they probably tell him stuff that they don't talk to anyone else about. I mean, I think you are seen as a mentor to a lot of these players that we have signed to us at Secret Golf.
I think that's probably true. I mean, the way you join Secret Golf or you're invited onto our platform, you know, essentially I'm shooting the intellectual property of our tour players. You know, I always thought that Jack Nicklaus knew the most, Lee Trevino. Well, of course they did. They did it for decades, and certainly we do too. So I started filming this 5 years ago of all this intellectual property, how they grip it. Why do they grip it that way? Where do they get the power from? How do they use their legs? Why do they do your legs that way? And I've got this 29 of them now with LPGA players, and what you've got now is you've got this huge body of content of that now can be sort of curated and moved into a certain way where now I can address what I really want to do is to get the people in their own handicap division get the right video that they need right now to learn. That's never been done, and that's the focus of Secret Golf.
And you have how many players now?
30. 29.
30 player 30. Channels, basically, on Secret Golf.
30 players channels. But more importantly, we've written a curriculum from how to break 100, 90, 80, 70. Also, we have this deep search engine, which is the most exciting thing. So I'll promise you, Frank, that you can't go to our site, or anyone for that matter, and search a term. What do your eyeballs do on the swing? I guarantee you we've got 29 videos of what your eyeballs do. We got every piece of it, categories, subcategories.
I know what Tim's do. I mean, Tim is a really excellent chipper of the ball. He's a great wedge player, aren't you, Tim?
Yes, Frank, I am. Thank you very much for saying that.
Sounds slightly baited.
Did you go to church Easter Sunday? You're lying already. You're a bad Catholic. You know that? Tim went through the yips a little bit. He's away from that. But see, you can go right to Steve's site.
Exactly. You know what I love, though? We were walking around the course today, and, I mean, I laugh anyway, because we're walking together, but so many groups of guys will be like, oh my gosh, look, that's Steve Elkington. And they'll run and tell their friends, and then everyone's looking over. But we had so many people come up to us, and they say, oh, Secret Golf. one guy in particular who was wearing a green jacket, a member of Augusta National, came up and said, "You have changed my golf game. Secret Golf has changed my life."
And we're like, and he invited me to come play with him. How about that at Augusta?
Do you need a caddy?
Huh? I think you have to be. I think you have to be certified. I'm not sure you're in.
I'm certifiable. Certifiable.
Certifiable.
I'm certifiable. Yeah, absolutely. Go, Tim.
Hey, Diane. Can I ask you a question, Diane?
Of course you can.
Yesterday you were on with us.
Yes.
And apparently you'll be on with us again tomorrow.
Good.
Because Frank's likes having you there
every day.
But yesterday we were talking about a party that was supposed to go on last night that you didn't know about, I don't think, until you suddenly got invited.
Yeah, and then I went and enjoyed it.
There he goes.
Tell us about it. What happened?
You can't mention a party around me and then expect me not to go. I'm like, I'll get a crush.
It was a good event. Tell us about it.
Oh, it was brilliant. It was Caddies for a Cure, which is a fantastic charity, and it was really good to be part of it. And, there were some guest speakers there. Sean Foley, who's Justin Rose's coach right now, used to coach Tiger Woods, and also Bubba Watson's caddy.
Teddy Scott.
Oh, my gosh. The stories that he told. You know, these guys sat there and they just kind of told stories from their personal experience and their years on tour. And it was great. It was a brilliant night. Raised fantastic awareness for the charity. But a really good group of people together. A lot of caddies were there. Pat Perez's caddy was there. Patton Kazire's caddy. Charlie Hoffman's. There was a good
Patton
bunch.
Patton has just signed with you guys, right?
Well, he
with
signed Super a while Golf. Ago. Yeah, yeah. We released his player channel.
No, he's been on there for a while.
Has he?
Yeah, Patton's my fave player that we have because he's just such a nice guy. He's so down to earth. And we actually shot his player channel before he had his two wins on tour this season, and we're so happy for him. I feel like he's my little brother, and I'm like, yay, well done. But it's excellent. We love having Patton on board.
Yeah,
we had a good time last night. Sean Foley had some great insight, and I want to pose this to Steve because Steve is a power hitter. Bubba Watson, and he was asked, Tim, one of the people in the audience said, how did he hit that hook that took, you know,
The one at
10 that just took a right turn. It came out of the trees and just turned dead right and went straight up. Sean Foley's answer to that was it was his pure velocity. Nobody else could really do that. It's the velocity with which he hits that ball. Does that make sense to you, the spin?
Well, certainly there'd be one factor for sure. It'd be that he would be able to curve it. I mean, Bubba Watson has incredible, gifted, educated hands, I would say, right? And I think I read somewhere that Bubba Watson used to, when he was younger, used to practice with wiffle balls and stuff and used to do big curves, and I'm probably sure that's how he manipulated his hand action to be able to, do that, right? So I think the main thing there was I just can't believe he hit it, but I can't believe he saw the shot, right? It takes, you have to execute that shot, sure. But how about just like, yeah, I can do this. This is a hole there for me. And because when we play, everyone that's listening there, they go, yeah, I could go there, but I really can't do that. I just don't have that move. But he had that move. And he's always curved the ball a lot. So, yeah, velocity has something to do. But I would argue to Sean Foley that there's probably another 100 guys that have the same amount of clubhead speed with a wedge as he did. So
okay, good. See, that's what I wanted because I found that there's so many great guys out there and so many guys who really have that much power.
Yeah, for sure.
Just one guy? No, I don't think so.
You don't think Jason Day would have the same velocity from there? But of
course, to envision the shot is what you're saying.
Being left-handed makes a difference too.
What was that?
Being left-handed.
Yeah, for sure. That was the only way. No one could slice it that much, but because the swing to face ratio just can't be done with your wrist angles. But to go the other way, left-handed for sure. Mate, he was so lucky that he had a shot because it could have finished right up underneath any number of 100. Magnolia trees while it tumbled down that hill.
Yeah, it was an incredible shot, and it broke somebody's heart. Louis Oosthuizen, I believe, crushed him.
That's how legends are made.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we're here with Steve Elkington, legend on the PGA Tour. He's not a legend yet. He's not old enough. But PGA Championship winner at Riviera Country Club, by the way, which is a nice little track to get to play. We've got some – what are the groups? What have we got going here?
Yeah,
what are you pointing out? Tee times are out.
Well, we look at our secret golf players first of all. So we like to see, we have Brian Harman, Pat Perez, Jason Duffner, Patton Kazire, and Mark Leishman playing this year. Elk, what do you think of, well, have a look at their pairings.
Well, I have a theory about this week. You know, there's so much talk about Tiger and Phil and, Stenson and you name them. I mean, I'll leave someone out here for sure. Spieth, they're all up there and there's so much pressure, so much focus on them. I'm telling our guys that I said, I want two things from our guys. One, I'd like to have an early tee time because I think it's a possibility, Frank, that this could be a steal week. There's no pressure on any of these guys right now. The press is on everyone else. I got Brian Harman out the gate here early, 9:25. I like his game a lot. He could be a guy that could get out and shoot 140, 139 the first 2 days, 4 or 5 under. That's what they're all trying to do, by the way, is everyone's trying to position himself 4 under. And the reason I think Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson are so much pressure on the field is they will be at 140 to 141 after 2 days because they know how to manage Augusta. They're playing well enough. I don't see a blow up out of either one of them. They're going to try to position themselves, like I said, and so that puts enormous pressure on everyone else. Thus, I think early tee time, getting out to a good start, is the thing to be, place to be.
There you go.
You know, there's guys, Frank, that we don't talk about that have an awful lot of ability in the tour. I mean, there's so many. And I do think that the winner this year will come from probably one of the top 15 players in the world. But think of a guy like Tony Finau, who obviously has the distance to do whatever he needs to do at the Masters. But once in a while, there's a guy that kind of comes out of nowhere. And he's not really out of nowhere, but you know what I'm saying. He hasn't won a major, hasn't really contended yet for a major. So I think there's a couple of those guys, and Tony's one that I've got an eye on. There's a couple of those guys that I think, as Steve was just talking about, in the first couple of rounds, we're going to see their names. And then it's about the pressure. On the weekend, if you're within a couple of shots, if you have the lead and you're Tony Finau, can you sleep on that? Can you get up the next morning and do it again and do it again? I mean, it's 4 rounds. That's what makes it so incredible. That's what makes you really impressed with the Bubbas and the Tigers and the Phil Mickelsons, the guys that have won this tournament, is you don't just have a good round. Everybody can do that. They got to do it for 4 days and do it with enormous pressure come Sunday.
Well, of course, there's no doubt everything you said is true. Brian Harman had a great run last year in the U.S. Open, and he got beaten right there by a hot player at the end. That man that won that, is he playing this week or is he still out?
Kepka. No, he's injured. He's not playing.
No, he's not playing. Yeah, no. Kepka's not playing. Dustin Johnson's coming back to this tournament now. He's been off for a while. You're not hearing, he's the number one player in the world, ranked number one in the world, I should say, yet we're not hearing any buzz about Dustin Johnson.
Well, that's my point. It's that there's so much focus on one part of the field. It's almost like two tournaments, right? Half this field is preparing themselves in a very relaxed way, no stress, and then the other guys are just getting pummeled, right? Dustin Thomas is another one I left out. Spieth's another one I left out.
Rory.
I've got to back up for a minute, though.
Rory's going to be going for... Grand Slam.
But I got to back up. Sure. The game that I really like, and I've had the opportunity to play some golf with him, is Brian Harman. Mm-hmm. I like Brian Harman's game.
He's left-handed, mate. The easiest course in the world to play left-handed is Augusta because you can hit a fade. And that's why I think Bubba and Phil have done so well here is they can slide the ball from right to left, left-handed, and go around those corners so easy. It's a joke.
Yeah. I like Brian Harman's game. He's a player, and he's on your team, right?
Yep, he is. Yep.
He is. He's on Secret Golf. So you can go out to secretgolf.com and click on Join and then click on the Brian Harman channel and you just kick in what you want to learn.
Yeah, we've got Duffner. He played good last week. Patton Kazire, of course, we mentioned. Mark Leishman always seems to show up. Putts so good, right? Leishman is known for playing well in big tournaments and putts well. Pat Perez, mate. You never know about the big hippie from Scottsdale.
He's so funny.
He is funny.
He really hits it straight, so he should be all right. Here.
Talking about Mark Leishman, Mark is out with Tiger Woods.
Oh, he's playing with Tiger
tomorrow.
Woods.
Yep, they're out at 10:42. Tommy Fleetwood, Mark Leishman, and Tiger Woods. So you know Mark. Like, how will he feel seeing that he's in a group with Tiger?
I would be so happy. I'd be so excited because I'm going to get to see this whole show.
Yeah.
And if I can perform well in this group, I'm going to be stealing some major, major karma from him.
Oh,
I used to think when I played with the number one player in the world, I got 3 things happen for sure. One, I was going to get to see what their number one player... Well, Tiger's not number one, but you know what I'm saying. You get to see what they're doing. If you play well, you can steal all that energy that's in the crowd and all that drama that goes with it. And if you do play well and you go back in the locker room and all the other guys know that you played good with them, well, then you're up on them too. So to me, it was always a huge opportunity to play with number one.
My favorite story, well, one of my favorite stories that you tell is when you played with Tiger at Riviera.
Where the guy fell out of the tree?
Yeah. That is the funniest
story. Tim, were you at Riviera or was that Roger?
Yeah, that story. Tell us that one.
We want to hear this story.
I got paired with Tiger Woods in the LA Open. 10 years ago. And Tiger Mania is pretty big out there in Riviera because he's come from California. And as we got down to the 6th hole, I'm saying there's 15,000, 20,000. There's no way that I can quantify that, but I'm just telling you, there's so many people you can't see, right?
Sure.
Got to the sixth hole, the par three, the famous hole at Riviera with the with the bunker in the middle of the green. And I had told my caddy, I called him that night, I said, hey, man, we're playing with Big Cat tomorrow. I got one rule for you tomorrow. When everyone's moving and people are going everywhere, do not tell them to stop. I'll play unless someone just walks over the top of me. I'm swinging while they're moving everywhere. Because I don't care. I don't want to make everyone stop when they don't want to stop. They want to keep watching Tiger. So anyway, I said, because that's what he does. He never tells anyone to stop. He just keeps going, right?
Yeah.
So we get on the sixth hole, and down there in that part of the course, there's a lot of those big old sycamore trees everywhere, and they kind of hang around up around the tee. When we got to the sixth hole, there was three guys up in the tree. One of them's hanging right over the top of the tee. One guy's like a monkey hanging over the tree. Tiger takes a 6-iron, whatever he's got, 7-iron, goes in to hit his shot, and he's doing his routine. And he just takes it back, and right in the middle of his backswing, this guy fell out of the tree, straight down onto the ground. Tiger hits his shot, does not even have the dignity to turn around and look at this guy. I'm thinking, is that just BS, or is he just so focused he didn't even hear this thing? I'm like, hey, T, we got a man down over here. We might need an ambulance, okay? And, you know, he's, what? Mate, he's so focused. You know how he was, right? So focused. And I'm like, did that really happen where a guy fell in the tree and he didn't even look back to see if the guy was okay? It was amazing.
Just that. If a guy falls out of a tree and Tiger doesn't hear it, does it really happen?
Exactly.
Hey. Oh, come on. This is the tree in the woods story. What are we doing there?
This that I'm working on.
I know.
Frank Bassett is joining Augusta, Georgia at the Northwood Club with Steve Elkington and Diane Knox. Secret Golf. We have some more guests that'll be joining us as well, and we thank Prime Sport for helping us set everything up there at Northwood Club. Sounds like a lot of people will have a ver just out.
What is that?
Front gates there at Augusta National.
Frank? Yeah, no, you were breaking up a little bit. I don't know if it's. Did you pay the electric bill back in Dallas? Are you okay there, Tim?
Don't know. I'm fine.
You're back.
Hey, Steve, I did want to ask you about Ian Poulter. Talk about momentum. Talk about coming off of a high. Can he carry that momentum from Houston into Augusta this week, you think?
I hope not.
You should have seen the look that he just gave
me. Oh, yeah, you should have seen that, Tim. You're in trouble.
Wow.
I think
realistically, of course he can. But he'll be a little fatigued. But I think, you know, he's been here plenty of times. He knows what he's doing. It was a great win. There's no doubt about it. I always give props to people that win. It's hard to do it. And he did it. And he's done it before. So good luck to him.
There you go. Hey, you want to take a quick break? And when we come back, bring in a special guest. What do you think? I'll let you get us out of here. You're so good at it.
Okay. Let's do it. Again, you're listening to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio. Frank Bassett coming to us live from Augusta, Georgia's site of the Masters this week. And we'll return right after this. Stay with us. And welcome back to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio. Tim Matthews in the Dallas studios. Frank Bassett coming to us from Augusta, Georgia at the Northwood Club outside the front gates of Augusta National. It is Tuesday, April the 3rd, so another practice round in the books today. To be in the books for most of the competitors getting out and play today. Frank, did you say that earlier there was Phil and Tiger playing a practice round today?
They did. They played together. They played the back nine today. Yes.
Played the back nine together, and Tiger had two eagles on the back nine?
Two eagles on the back nine.
Currently four under for the tournament.
Yeah. Okay. Now a leaderboard update. As we do at the top and the bottom of every hour. Yeah, I thought that was hilarious when Elk said
that. Practice round scores we'll keep.
We're going to keep those practice round scores up on the board and let Tiger be four up on everybody right now or whatever. Yeah, no, it was great.
Seems
there's
like
huge crowds. Huge crowds following us.
The Masters brings a lot of people, and you're saying that, a lot of crowds. A lot of people come for practice rounds, and sometimes they leave after the practice rounds. Some stay for the weekend. It's a very tough ticket to get, so not everybody that would like to get in on the weekend can do it. So sometimes a practice round is as good as it gets. And that means athletes from other sports, which brings us to the man who I assume is sitting to your right.
He's sitting directly across from me right now. And I'm almost as tall as he is.
You got with? Yeah.
Almost as tall as he is.
Not quite.
No, not quite. Yeah, do you want me to tell you who it is?
Well,
Yeah.
Former NBA player Frank Borkowski. I'll do it.
How did you guess that? That was really good, pal. I'm
clairvoyant.
I'm clairvoyant.
Psychotic.
Yeah. Frank, thanks for being with us. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Doing great. Frank, you had a long career in the NBA, starting back in the early mid 80s, if I'm not mistaken, going all the way into the 90s. You played for a number of different teams.
Yep.
Got to the finals with Seattle.
96.
No, doesn't even have a team anymore.
No.
So your career, a long time.
Tragic.
What was your favorite stop? Again, San Antonio, Milwaukee, Charlotte, Lakers, Seattle. What was your favorite
Seattle,
stop?
Seattle. Now that you brought up Seattle, I played my first 2 years in the league there under Lenny Wilkins, and then went back there in 96 and went to the finals against the Bulls and lost in six. So I'm most emotionally attached to that team and that city, basketball-wise.
And when you played in that finals, was there a particular person on the Bulls that you had to go head-to-head with an awful lot?
Michael Jordan?
I'm curious. I was thinking more Dennis Rodman.
Yes. Yeah, Dennis was tough. I mean, he wasn't tough. He was a flopper, which annoyed the hell out of me, but he was probably pound for pound the best rebounder in the game to date, right? So
yeah.
He was a challenge. But the team, I mean, that's the year they won 72 games and probably the best basketball team ever put on a court, so we had our work cut out for us.
They were an awfully good team, Rodman included in that. And go ahead, Frank.
No, the man sitting across from me, I have to ask this, because last night, of course, we had to watch the carnage, the Michigan-Villanova game. What were your impressions of that game?
You know, I don't pull for anybody. I just hope for a good game that, you know, we all hope for, and we didn't get it, so I turned it off at halftime or just after halftime. So, but Villanova, Howie Long's one of my closest friends, and he went to Villanova, so I was pulling for Villanova for that reason. But it was tough to watch.
It was a hard game to watch. We watched it to the bitter end, Tim, and then I went to bed. But,
hey, Frank got, you know, went to Augusta with me, obviously, but he got the first impression today with a clubhouse badge. I took him in the clubhouse to have a cup of coffee. That seems his first impression of Augusta.
Yeah. Well, let's go. Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
What was it? I mean, it's got to be more than amazing.
It was surreal because you see it on TV and you see, like, I grew up, my dad watching golf. I just started golfing 10, 15 years ago, so I wasn't a fan of any sport. Now I'm a fan of golf. But to have my dad watch, and we were like, Masters? Well, who would watch the Masters? And now I get to go, and I'm like, oh, my God. And the TV just doesn't do it justice, and that's what all my friends said that had been and knew I was going. So. And it doesn't. It's just you have to get here and you have to see it and you have to experience it. And then to go with Elk and be treated like royalty, it's pretty impressive.
That's pretty cool. The undulations, I mean, just the elevation changes out there are absolutely unbelievable.
You don't see any of it
on
TV.
Can't, no.
And then even, I forget what hole we were on, but we were walking from a distance. I was looking at the green, and the closer I got to the green, I saw there's three elevations to the green, and that flag is tucked back there. So you have to hit a precise shot just to be near the flag. You can get on the green, but you have a 3 or 4 four-putt coming. But
all about precision, right? We saw Mutombo.
Oh, did you?
Frank's buddy was out there.
Ran into Mutombo.
Oh, yeah.
We locked horns a couple times over the years.
Just once or twice. Yeah. You know, I had an opportunity to play with Artis Gilmore in a charity tournament. What a sweet man he was. I loved him. Oh, my God. Hugh Durham was my playing partner. Coach Durham from Georgia was my playing partner. He was the consummate coach. I'd hit a bad shot, and I'd go, and he'd go, Frank, you're a better player than that. Now, this is what we're going to do next.
Right.
Calm, cool, collected.
But Artis
was incredible. His grips were, can you see this on the radio? This big. I mean, his grips were huge.
He had the strongest grips.
Yes.
The hand, like, I played with Artis in San Antonio. When he shook your hand,
he would try
and break it, so you just didn't shake his hand. You fist bumped him back before fist bumping was even fist bumping.
I shook his hands, and I grabbed it. Of course, I could feel, and when I did, I just squeezed a little harder, and I looked at him and said, "That didn't hurt you, did I, big boy?"
I met Artis Gilmore at the Players, actually, because he went to Jacksonville University, and so did Russell, my brother.
Hugh Durham coached there in his later years.
And he was following Russell. He wanted to support him, so I think we were on the third tea, and one of Russell's friends said, "Oh, hello, Mr. Gilmore, how are you?" And I was standing there, and he said, "Oh, Diane, this is Mr. Gilmore from JU." I thought he was one of the lecturers at JU, and I said, "Oh, did you teach Russell?"
I thought you were going to say, you
don't "Please look at the height of him and the size of his hands."
Yeah. Do you really think like Happy Gilmore?
Do you think he taught golf or business management?
He taught big time basketball, the old ABA days, and all that. So, Frank, your impression of the golf course is spot on. Everybody says that. But you're in the clubhouse with golf royalty, truly.
Right.
What was your impression of walking through those doors into that clubhouse?
Just the respect people have for Elk. You see it from a distance. If I trail right behind him, I see how people react to him. And then also the pros, the guys that came before him or played against him, they go out of their way to come and say hi. And it's sort of like when I see Mutombo. Mutombo and I didn't like each other when we played against each other. I didn't like him, he didn't like me. But when we see each other now, we're like all lost best friends.
Sure.
And that's the competition. That's what competition does. That's the marrow of competing, right? That you get to see these people later, and you offer them their respect. You know. So
yeah. I asked Mutombo. I said, "You love golf?" He goes, "Who doesn't?" That right. kind of summed up. That's who summed up the deal
right,
for me.
Right.
That's
right.
Very true. And that, you know, it's like Phil and Tiger now playing together, and now they're laughing and backslapping and becoming more friends later in their
Thursday,
lives.
Thursday, that won't happen.
It will not happen. Thursday is a bloodletting.
You can kiss that goodbye.
they're throwing the golf community a bit of a loop right now. No one knows what to make of this. This is not normal, Phil playing with Tiger. Normally it's a different dynamic, right? And where's Happy Tiger been all these years, you know, and all that? So I thought it was a great day for golf as far as what we're going to see in the future. Possibly. We all know that they're going to be first tee starters in 20 years from now, right?
Oh, sure.
We saw day one of it today, so I'm that's what I'm remembering about that.
Wow. Now, you played, Elk, you played against, as you did, Frank, played against some legends of the game. Who was your toughest competitor outside of yourself in your own mind? Who was your toughest competitor head-to-head?
Well, Tiger Woods, you know, I got to play against a lot of great number ones. To me, it was always about the mental, not so much the physical. I saw plenty of physical players, and, you know, it's all about controlling your ball. I didn't get to play against Trevino that much, but Jack was head and shoulders above everyone else mentally, but then Tiger is also head and above. That's why he's back now. I mean, his putting game is great, chipping's great, but that experience factor that he brings and be able to take a number that it looks like he's going to shoot a 75 and shoot a 69, I mean, there's just hardly anyone possesses that much turnaround. You know, he has that ratio of being able to do something with nothing. So Tiger Woods, for sure.
Frank, how about you?
I get asked that question a lot. With basketball, it's a little bit different. Like, who was the hardest one to stop from scoring is Kareem. Who was physically the toughest one to match up with is Buck Williams. But as a competitor, Michael was an assassin. And later, Kobe, but I didn't play much against Kobe, maybe 4 or 5 years. But Michael wanted to step on your throat and spit in your face and kill you. And he's a friend of mine, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's off the court.
I've
done
Tiger.
Stuff
Same
socially.
Deal.
With, yeah, yeah.
Same
I mean,
deal.
Off the court, it's friendship. But
and that separates him from the rest of them.
Yeah, he was certainly a force.
In 97, when Tiger won this tournament for the first time by 12 strokes, I was the leading money winner coming into this event. I had just won the Players, and then I'd won Doral, then the Players, back-to-back. So I was leading money winner coming into this event. And I wasn't playing great. And I teed off early on Sunday, shot a good round, and I was in the bathroom. This is at about 1:30 or 2 o'clock, washing my hands, washing my face, and I heard the toilet flush, and I looked to the side, and boom, out comes red shirt Tiger, getting ready to go to the tee to just create history here in a minute. And he's washing his hands, and, you know, I'm not going to look that way because I don't want to stop, you know, I don't know what it's like in your deal, but if some guy's hot, you're not really going to be visiting, you know.
Right.
And I looked over, I was washing my hand, I looked over through the mirror and I saw him and I said, hey, good luck to you, man. Hope you do it, you know. And he looked at me and he turned his eyes to me and he was already had sweat running down the side of his thing and eyes were just like this and I'm like, I gotta go. I'm out of here. That's a little freaky.
A little intense.
Oh,
a little
yeah.
intense was he?
That's and then he funny. Went out and won by 12 and then I was like, I remember that day, man. It's like what the hell was that?
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. That was an unbelievable.
I want to go back to something Elk said earlier about the Bubba Watson shot. He said nobody could slice the ball like that. He hasn't seen me enough. I could have pulled that shot off as a right-hander.
I could pull that off any time. It's so good to have you guys here, and it's people that I've watched. I mean, I'm up and around the same age as you guys, but I've watched you. In fact, I'm probably older, but watched you guys for years, and what an honor to have you sitting across this stage from us here at the Masters at the where are we?
The Northwood Club.
Thank you.
I'm here
tired.
For a reason.
It was Diane Knox. She said Russell earlier. We want to clarify that Diane Knox is the sister of Russell Knox, a PGA Tour professional. And so I wanted to clarify that because we didn't. And Knoxy, you're fabulous being here with us on Golf Talk America.
No, thank you for having me.
And we're honored to be associated with SecretGolf.com and with you, Elk. It's just a special thing.
And likewise, Frank, we love being on the radio. Diane is a great radio personality. She was in Scotland. Probably the best-looking Scottish woman in the last 700 years over there, which is...
The truth. That's absolute truth.
Don't really know how to take that. She's a byhander.
We have a big house. Let's keep it clean. But we have a big house here in Augusta. Yes. And Diane is staying in one of the rooms in the house. I'm downstairs with my hair sticking six ways of Sunday out, bed hair.
What hair?
Yeah, what hair? You're right. It's almost all gone. And so I'm on the computer trying to do some stuff and get ready for the shows today. And she comes bebopping down to get some coffee. No makeup, no nothing. Looked perfect.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, are you kidding me?
It's getting deep around here.
Oh, man. Yeah. We're going deep.
Put your boots on.
I called my wife and I said, get here quick.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. But anyway, it's so much fun to be with you guys. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to bring on somebody special that's visiting from Cleveland Golf. You're listening to Golf Talk America on PGAtour.com and PGA Tour Radio. Don't go anywhere. There's that music. Every time I hear that music, I know that the margaritas are close by. Frank Bassett back with you. Tim Matthews is on work release right now. We've lost him. I think his computer exploded back in Dallas, Texas. But we're still here and having a lot of fun. We're here live at the Northwood Club. Prime Sports, our sponsor this week. Thank you, Prime Sport, for everything that you do. And some special guests. My special guest host on stage this week is the beautiful and lovely and intelligent and smart and just awesome Diane Knox.
I'm so glad I'm here. You're boosting my confidence more every day. I love it.
Good gracious.
Thank you.
And sitting right across from us is one of the best golfers that's ever been around, and that's Mr. Steve Elkington. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Frank.
It's so good. You won the Players' Championship when it was the biggest purse in golf, wasn't it?
I certainly did, twice, when it was the biggest twice. So
yeah.
The important thing there for me was that 10-year exemption, mate. That was what I was looking for.
They cut that back now to a shorter exemption.
I won the last one. They changed it after I won in 97.
When you were winning the tournament, I was there living in Sawgrass, and we were patrons, but we were always at the Island Club, which used to be on top of the hill. Remember that behind the clubhouse?
Yeah.
Where we had bands, and we partied into the night. That doesn't go on anymore there. But
why not? I mean,
I'm upset.
Can you still make the trumpet happen?
I will be in. I can go back to it and do it in a little bit. Yeah. There's some better trumpet players out there today than I was in my day. But it was fun stuff. But anyway, Steve Elkington's joining us, and I'm just honored to have him on the set with us. Golf Talk America and SecretGolf.com. Secret Golf is Steve Elkington's endeavor, along with bringing in Diane Knox to help him with all their videos and podcasts and things. We've come to a relationship. So Secret Golf and Golf Talk America will be doing a lot of shows together. Secret Golf will be coming on and bringing their players on our platform on PGTour.com. So that's going to be really, really cool. Got another guest here. And this is a special guest because, I'm not going to say any more about it. I'm going to throw this to the lovely and talented Miss Diane Knox.
Oh, yes. He's very special. This is a guy, actually, I've known for a good few years now because he works closely with my brother, Russell Knox, because, of course, he plays with their clubs. From Shrixon and Cleveland Golf, it is Mike Dunphy.
Hey, Mike.
They made me introduce you because they said that with my Scottish accent, I said your name better than anyone else.
You said it really, really Dunphy. Well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's good to have you, man. We ran into each other at the PGA show, then we saw each other again last night at or yesterday, whatever, and we said, hey, you got to come on the show. So we're happy to have you here. You guys, had some incredibly nicely built product at the PGA Merchandise Show that you were showing me. And you have some pretty cool players that play your stuff, including Mr. Knox himself. But,
yes, it's been a good last few years with Strixon and with Cleveland Golf. The company's doing extremely well, and we have signed some very good players. We feel like we've got a pretty good group and a pretty good staff, including Russell Knox and many others, and we're just hoping to keep it going forward that way.
Well, you guys, I mean, you're known for, or were known a long time for all of your product, but your wedges especially. And I'd played your wedges before. I'm not right now, but I'm going back to them. We talked about that. I'm going to start popping those things again. But so what's the latest and greatest from Cleveland Golf?
Well, the history of Cleveland Golf of it being started in 1979 by Roger Cleveland, and he really started a company by making a remake of what's a Calamity Jane putter, which is Bobby Jones' putter. And
right.
He became a wedge expert and someone that basically started building golf clubs for PGA Tour players, and they liked them. And it was a different time back then in the 80s. And it kind of has morphed into the fact that we probably have the longest history and legacy of making the finest wedges in all of golf today. But that's where it started, and we still have that. I mean, Cleveland Golf's a full line of everything, but yes, it is known for its wedges, and will continue to be known for its wedges.
Great. I want to come over to your trailer. You guys are, of course, at every tour event, and at the Masters especially, so if a player has anything that they need, that's playing your product, that you're right there to help them. Give us an idea of what goes on a daily basis at the Masters specifically, not just a PGA Tour event, but the Masters, with your players and what you do from your trailer that's parked out here across the street from Augusta.
Well, this is kind of a special thing for me because I'm not out every week on the PGA Tour. I manage all of player development, so I'm in Canada, Latin America, a lot of the college events. But what happens out on the PGA Tour here, we have a group of guys that basically take care of the players with their product if they need something or whatever, and then it happens every week. The Masters, as Steve will know, is probably a little bit different because there's a lot less product that's being switched out in
most guys cases. Guys are pretty set when they know what they want when they come to this event, and then might tweak something, whether it could be maybe it's different shaft or maybe a slight different grind, like literally grind the bottom off one of their clubs to get the turf or the sand reaction, etc. And it's fine-tuning mode, right?
Pretty much. Yes, pretty much. But you pretty much get here knowing what is in your bag and looking at the conditions and be ready to go by Thursday.
But now for our listeners, you guys in those trailers, you have each of your players' stats down to the most minute detail. You know exactly what they're doing with their club, what the grinds are, what the shafts are, how you're trimming them, everything that you're doing, right?
I mean, yes, you have that all the way through. I mean, you have. I think we use Google Drive, and you have a history of it. Like for me, I pretty much know what somebody had played in from right out of college, all the way through player development, and all the way to the tour. So, you know, it's never really going to get that far off from what they originally started with. You're always going to test product, and that's what we use the truck for. But it usually goes back down to the original. I can tell a story about Russell's, or about Diane's brother. Russell Knox. He did it the easiest, and he's the only guy I ever knew that did this. He didn't know what his lie angle was supposed to be. So he took a 6-iron, and he basically bent it as far flat as he could. And went and hit some golf balls. Then he bent it as far upright as he could. Went and hit some golf balls. And then he kept going back and forth, bend, upright, flat, until he found what his lie angle. I've never heard of anyone doing that, but sounds like a pretty good idea.
I'm sure it worked. There is there's a way to do it. You know, like what he did there. I do a dynamic lie test where you can put tape on the bottom.
Sure.
Yeah. And or put a line on the ball, line it up like you would a putt, and hit it on the face, and it'll draw a line on that face and tell you if it's upright or flat.
Right. It's they always talked about to try to find the right lie angle using a lie board, that sometimes the lie board would lie to you.
Exactly.
Because all the turf is different. We find out with wedges that a lot of guys, and Steve will know this, that you play a little flatter maybe in your lob wedge sometimes.
You don't want them going left.
Yeah.
So you play your wedges a little flatter, no left.
And everybody's different, and most of the time their specs will not change that much, especially in their 20s and 30s. You know, I'm sure with changes and basically now with people and the workout regimens and everything, it's changed some of it. But
yeah,
once your specs are set, they probably are going to stay the same. The one thing we always, the question that when somebody's maybe not driving the golf ball very well, the first question you ask is, well, when you were driving the golf ball, what was your best driver? What did you remember about it? What was the dynamics of it? What was the setup of it? Because sometimes guys get away from that.
Yeah. Interesting. But now, for the LPGA, I want to go here for just a second. I know Jan Stevenson. We all know Jan. She's a good friend. She brought me over at the PGA show. Exio is part of the Cleveland
Pronounce
group.
Zexio.
Zexio.
Zexio. Yeah, kind of Sexio. Yeah. Sexio.
Okay. I like
how many
it.
How many golf balls were in that bathtub? Too many.
There
you go. There were a lot.
What
Tell
is
us
that?
About
it's
that
a
product.
Ball? It's a ball?
No, this is the new range of clubs.
The new range of clubs, yeah.
Yeah. Zexio's been around for 15 years, I think, 15, okay. 16 years, and it's a product like no other. I'm not really the expert to talk about it, but we have a gentleman that works at our company by the name of Chuck Theory who's done excellent work with it. It's had tremendous growth. They're using lightweight products that nobody else in golf are doing, and it's really helped from the women's side, but it's also helped from the group of... I guess geriatric, I could say, as people get older, as we all are. Yep, and it's because you lose swing speed and the lightweight of it. So they've targeted. There's a certain niche that they've targeted, and I said, no one is doing in the golf industry. Really, no one's doing what Zexio is doing.
I'm not saying geriatric.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
the
is that what Ernie Els is playing with now?
Yes, he is. But I wouldn't say that Ernie Els is geriatric.
No.
I'd say that there's
his manager
he's on
was
the,
just here.
Yeah, I'd say that he is. He's aging very nicely and still looks to have a lot of good game and good golf ahead of him.
We might have to edit this segment, but or no, hunt down.
Mike, I have a question. What? I play Titleist ball my whole career. What is the characteristics of the Strixon ball, and what does it? What would it mean to the company for a Strixon ball to win the Masters, and what does that look like? What's at stake here at some of these companies? Because there's a lot of jockeying, right?
Yes, and first of all, and I say this, and it's real easy for me. I don't say this because I work for the company, but I believe the Strixon golf ball is the best golf ball in the world, and there are several that are very, very good. I've seen a lot of the testing. I've seen a lot of the differences. It's the differences between what our strengths are from a Strixon standpoint is the spin skin and the gradient. There's different things about the golf ball. And we have actually more patents and more golf balls. I think Strixon was the only company that's ever had five golf balls submitted that were by Golf Digest a gold medal. So we're making golf balls for all the way along the line, and I think we're ahead of some people, of some of our competitors, and we have to continue to be because it's a tough market out there. For someone to win the Masters with the Strixon golf ball, it will happen one day, and I think it's good for any company because I think it validates your product. I just think that I think this is the last market that we've kind of. Come to because it's a company out of from the Far East and it's done really well in Europe and it's starting to do really well in North America.
Is there and I'm not trying to make you do anything, is there a tagline like a tour player, we say this ball, I use this ball because it won't balloon or it is good in the wind, and is there something about the Strixon that players hang their hat on?
Yes. Out of the two models, the Z-Star and the XV, it's basically been proven. It is the best wind ball.
Wind ball.
Is very, very...
Really? So if you're a high hitter or you spin it a lot, the Strixon could be a really good number for you?
So I can watch it all. I can watch it and see it even on the range when you have different range balls that are being hit. And I watch a lot of college golf, and I watch a lot of balls spin that I know aren't supposed to spin, and I can kind of name sometimes what brand it is, but it's
so
we've got some good characteristics in the golf ball.
So okay, so I'm a low double digit handicapper. Okay, I'm in my 60s.
Wait, are you willing to say your age on the radio? 60,
I'm 63.
Okay, there we go.
There I am. Okay, now that felt terrible.
Oh, liberating.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so, and I'm a high ball hitter. Okay, liberating. Thank you. So I hit the ball high. So I'm spinning the you-know-what out of it, probably, with my driver. And I play games with shafts and lofts and all that. And I play a ball that is by another company that has an X after it. I play the X version of that ball. What Srixon ball should I be playing if I'm a high ball hitter and say I'm 11 handicap?
I would say the Q-Star Tour, which just came out this last year in 2017. It's been incredible, and actually it's the ball that I play now. I think what happens is people want sometimes, especially men, want to play something that's a little bit more than what we probably should. And it's really hard to, like, say, hey, I probably don't compress that ball, or I probably need to go to something that is going to be able to stay in the air a little bit longer. And, because we get used to playing the golf ball we play. And that's why I tell people, test them all. And I try to tell young people, test them all. You know, I mean, it's the only constant in the game.
I tell the same thing to my son. And I said, let the machine tell you what's best.
Right.
That's what I do. I mean, if I tell someone what driver you want to play, I say, go test them all, and the machine will tell you. Mm-hmm. We used to hang our hat on like a 693 McGregor because it was just famous, right?
Oh, yeah.
But now you couldn't care less because the track man, they'll put this shaft in it, in 2 seconds you're hitting it, and they say, this is the best shaft for you with your whole deal. Boom, see you later, bye. Where's the checkout?
It's kind of become too easy, hasn't it?
It's pretty simple.
Yeah, it is.
That's neat stuff, though. I mean, and people don't realize that is the one thing that you use on every shot is that golf ball. When you look down to it, it's probably the most important
and
tool.
And the
bigger
one up here.
And the head up here.
Yeah.
It's competitive and it'll continue to be.
Sure.
The golf ball is the constant.
Who's, okay, Russell Henley plays your ball. Who are some of the other players?
Russell Docks, you have Hideki Matsuyama.
He could win this tournament.
Yes. Was with Ted Potter the other day, Keegan Bradley. I could continue to go down the list. We have over I think 25 in PGA Tour staff. Okay. We have a huge staff on the web.com tour, who John Flannery is the manager out there.
Okay.
I think you might have played a little golf with John Flannery.
I know Flannery.
Yeah. It just keeps moving forward.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mike Dunphy. Mike is the player development manager for Cleveland Golf and Srixon, and it's enlightening. I love having people like yourself on because the more we learn, the more we listen to people who know, the better off we can play this game and enjoy it through our lifetime. And as we age, you're right. I need that stiff X-tip shaft, and so everybody sees it. Quick story.
Your shaft may be too whippy, Frank.
It's at Basara Shaft, and it's just a little whippy.
Oh.
So, anyway, Mike.
Should I leave now?
Yeah, Mike, it's always, man, it's great to see you again, and great to have you, and we'll have to get together.
Frank, thanks for having me on. I won't tell anybody you're 63.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Just said it again.
Why do I feel like a big yellow bus is right on top of me right now? Mike, thank you a lot, pal. Hey, so guys, what do you think?
Excellent.
Kind of fun today.
That was so interesting. Yeah. Always good. Always enjoyable.
It's always great to have you. I mean, doing stuff with you guys, talk about secret golf, is going to be great. So I'm looking really forward to it. And
it's fun. As I said, I'm honored to be here. Steve's the same. We're having a great
week.
And
don't forget, tomorrow, by the way, it's Sundress Wednesday at the Masters Par 3 tournament.
This is all I've heard
all
right. day
it
today,
is Sunday.
By the way.
That's right.
It's a very, very a traditional favorite. Thing,
it
like
is.
Apple pie and ice cream.
My favorite
Sundress
day.
Sundress Wednesday.
We'll be there. We'll all be out there. We have a meeting in the morning for the Golf Writers Association of America, and after that, we will be out on the course. So,
waiting a sundress.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So, anyway, Steve Elkington, thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
So
I
much,
look forward
pal.
So much to bringing all of our players and to this platform. And golfers, we know the most. Let's talk about it.
Let's do it. You can learn more from them than you can from an instructor most of the time. So, Steve Elkington and Frank Bassett and Diane Knox, thank you, dear.
Thank you. I'll be back tomorrow.
And everybody else, you'll be back tomorrow, and we'll have a Folds of Honor event tonight. How's that?
Excellent. I'm down.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We love each and every one of you, and we appreciate everything that you do. Follow us at Golf Talk America on Twitter, and keep listening to our show. See ya.